All right, welcome back to the Bible in Context. Hey, Nate.
It's good to be here again.
Yeah,
glad you're back. Did you notice it's raining again on us?
Dang it, I didn't. One day.
Just a little bit. I know. It seems like every time we get together.
It really does. Well, we went through our summary last time. It was raining then, too. And so now we're on to chapter 18.
Yes.
We're going to keep moving on the story. And you just mentioned this a minute ago. We're finally caught up to the sermon series.
Yeah, so this is very fresh in my mind. This is what I've been studying all week. So hopefully I'll have a few more things to say.
Yeah, let's try to keep on track with the sermon series, and maybe if we can, maybe let's pass it up so we can do some digging before you get there.
Ooh, yeah, that would be good.
Cool. All right, well, in this story, we just left off with the covenant of circumcision that Abraham and Yahweh made, and Abram was obedient. He circumcised his household, and now we have three kind of mysterious men that show up to Abram's dwelling at Mamre, near the Oaks of Mamre.
Yeah, and the chapter actually starts out by not talking about the men, but just saying, and the Lord appeared to him.
Yahweh.
And it's Lord capitalized. All the letters are capitalized, so we know it's Yahweh. And Yahweh appeared to him by the Oaks of Mamre. And we've talked about the Oaks of Mamre already, but this is the Promised Land. This is a land flowing with milk and honey, remnant of Eden itself.
Yeah, we talked about in chapters 13 and 14, when he came out of his exodus as well from Egypt, this is where he comes. And then whenever he patches things up with Lot, this is kind of where the story ends. So this is, like you said, this has a lot of Edenic connotations. It has a lot of narrative climaxes happening here. So this is a very elevated spot. Not to mention that it also has some word plays between Mamre, More, and Moriah, those two other Edenic spots throughout the narrative that also are on narrative climaxes. So this is just one of those. This is a very high point to start the narrative with.
Yeah.
Abram just chilling here at Mamre, at his dwelling.
Yeah, and I think it's significant. So he's sitting at the door of his tent in the heat of the day, which brings us back to Genesis 3, where God walks in the garden in the cool of the day. It doesn't bring us back to that at all.
No. Remember the...
Well, it means wind.
He came in the ruach of the storm.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There was some commentaries that talk about that, just Hamilton.
Yeah, well, a lot of the commentaries do, yeah. Nicott talks about it. I'm not sure if Wyndham does or not, but they come back to that, which... If it were something like cold or cool, I'd say, yeah, okay, we're on kind of an opposite.
Yeah, it's like, I was thinking it was kind of like a contrast where like the God in that moment that was right after they had fallen and comes in the storm. And this time it's more, I think the way that Hamilton puts it, the contrast is actually, he looked at it as in the garden, it was in the cool of the day where it was nice, it was breezy, it was comfortable.
Right.
But now outside of the garden. But I don't buy that because, one, it just said we're in the Oaks of Mamre, which is a place that is...
With the Edenic connotations.
Yeah. And so I took this as, okay, this is a moment where he's relaxed in the heat of the day, just resting in his tent in the shade.
And this is also giving us something about the time. So I don't know. I wonder, I haven't really dug into what's going on here. Why tell us that? Maybe it's something to do with the time of day, like the sun's up now, and so it's getting warmer. And maybe that, okay, this is a stretch. Take this with a grain of salt. I'm taking it with a grain of salt too. But the heat of the day, the sun's coming up. So what have we learned about sunrise in Genesis throughout this study?
That it happens every day.
Fair point.
All right. I don't remember.
It always happens, well, not always. Often with an exodus, there is a sunrise at the moment of deliverance.
Oh, okay.
So here's Yahweh coming. I don't know. Again, take this with a grain of salt. I'm spitballing here, but I feel like the fact that the Bible uses its dates and its timings very intentionally. I feel like that's what's going on here. Otherwise, it may just be a note that, it's the hot part of the day, so Abraham is relaxing at his tent. That's why he's there, not out doing something else.
Yeah, so there's only two other places in Scripture. It's 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel that phrase, heat of the day, just appears twice. And I don't see a correlation.
Yeah, I've looked into it before and couldn't really make a whole lot of it just offhand. I'm sure there's somebody out there with a good idea. But,
yeah. So for a little bit of a mystery there with the timing. It's probably meaningful. It's just hard to tell what the meaning is.
Yeah, I do like the idea of it being signifying Yahweh's coming, but at the same time, I don't know. I mean, in Genesis 15, he came at night, so...
Right, you know, right. Knows? Well, and maybe we're meant to... I do think there might be a little bit of a contrast here between the way that God appears to him here and the way that he appeared to him last time. So last time he appeared, and it was very much like he fell on his face in fear, right? I am God Almighty, is how he appears. And it's a much more unapproachable moment. But here... It's in the heat of the day. He appears as in human form. It's much more approachable. And so I think maybe we're meant to see a little bit of a contrast. Hmm.
Well, with that, there's a lot of reverence throughout this whole passage.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, anyway. So that's some good spitballs about that. I like it. But I don't know. Take it with a grain of salt.
Absolutely.
Let it fuel your thoughts. Oh, and if you want to go back and listen to that, in Genesis 3:8, we did an episode on Jeffrey Niehaus's paper about how the phrase "in the cool of the day" should actually likely be translated as "in the wind of the garden," or sorry, "in the wind of the storm."
Yeah.
So again, bringing us back to Sinai and things like that. So go listen to that if you want to. That's a good one. So let's talk about Yahweh coming to him as a man, because I think it's pretty clear cut, and I think we both are convinced, but I've seen some doubters on this.
Sure.
So let's walk through it a little bit. So, like you said, we're told in verse 1 that Yahweh appears to Abraham, and then he lifts up his eyes and there's three men. So is this Abraham sees three men and Yahweh came separately? Are these three men Yahweh? Is one of them Yahweh? What's going on here? Well, let's jump around the chapter a little bit just to solidify this idea, then we'll start stepping through the actual narrative. So in verses like 9 through 13, these men and Yahweh are at the same time having a conversation with Abraham, and we see in verse 10 and verse 13 where it says, "The Lord said to Abraham," and so we get this feeling that this conversation with the men is also a conversation with Yahweh. In verse 22... it says that, referring to two of these men, "So the men turned from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood before Yahweh." And so a couple of the men left. Abraham's still hanging out with Yahweh, and there's no extra notes about anyone else leaving or coming.
It implies that the third man is Yahweh.
Right. And then there's also verse 33, where finally, at the end of this chapter, Yahweh went his way as well, and he walks off just like one of the men. I think the most significant one for this is verse 10, where it says, "Yahweh said, I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son." So Yahweh is returning.
That means he has to be there.
He's there, right.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like I said at the very beginning of the chapter, it introduces the chapter by saying, "And the Lord appeared to him." And the next thing that happens is Abraham looks up and he sees these three men. And so I think that alone implies that the Lord is one of these three men.
Yeah, I think that definitely, that's enough, but I kind of wanted to just beat it to death and drive it home.
Yeah, because you're right. There are some that have a really hard time. And I think a lot of it is...
Yahweh is a man.
Well, Yahweh is a man and before the incarnation.
Right.
They feel like if we see, especially this being the angel of the Lord or the pre-incarnate Jesus showing up as a man, they feel like it...
demeans his actual incarnation.
Yeah, demeans. That's a good word for it. So I don't see it that way. I think it's pretty clear here. I think it's a strong argument. There's a strong argument to be made that this is the angel of the Lord with couple other angels. I know some other people will argue that this is the Trinity. This is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Which I don't see a strong argument for that.
No, well, the men go towards Sodom, and then it calls them angels later on, too. Yeah. So they're just messengers.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question for you. In Hebrews, where it talks about the pastor of Hebrews that wrote the book of Hebrews is encouraging the church to be hospitable. And his reason is because sometimes there have been some who have been hospitable, and unknowingly they were being hospitable to angels. Do you think maybe the author of Hebrews had this moment in mind when he wrote that?
Yeah, I think probably. There are some little hints that maybe Lot knew these were more than men, but because he goes up and has kind of the same response to them as Abraham has to Yahweh.
Right.
In them. But it's not really explicit. So it's very well he just saw a couple of travelers.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably what's going on here, is he entertained angels unaware.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there is some that even will argue that Abraham didn't even recognize that this was the Lord at first. But I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I think, well, first of all, it starts off by saying, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there were three men standing in front of him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent, which is not something you would typically see a patriarch do. And so right away, you're signified that, okay, there's something special about these men. He recognizes that.
And he calls him, oh, Lord, which is not Yahweh. He says, like, oh, Master, if I have found favor in your sight, don't pass by. And so he identifies himself with these, you know, this isn't a kingly procession necessarily. We're just told three men. Maybe there's something about them that's special, but either way, like, these people, if it was just some travelers, they're not Abraham's masters. So it seems like Abraham sees this as his master, his God.
Yeah. Well, and even that phrase, if I have found favor in your sight, isn't that a phrase that would typically, that's not going to come from, like, a king is not going to say that to his servant, right? It would be the other way around. The servant would say that to his king. And so I think that's another sign that Abraham really did understand who he was talking to.
Yeah, I mean, we go on with the passage, and he begins making a feast for them, or preparing food for them to offer something to his master here. And, I mean, he really goes all out. So I had to look this up. He gets 3 seahs of fine flour, which is 5 gallons of flour.
That'll make a lot of loaves of bread.
Yeah, for 3 guys plus Abraham and, I mean, he's got servants and things there, but I mean, this is for them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bread.
Yeah.
A lot of cakes.
Yeah.
And then he prepares a whole calf for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty luxurious as well.
And the cheese curds and the milk. And I mean, this is a feast fit for a king.
Yeah. This is not something that even in the hospitable culture of the ancient Near East would typically be given to a traveler.
Right. Right. That being said, it was very, like, hospitality was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
To them. And so it was normal for you to offer water, to have your visitors wash their feet and to provide some water for them to drink and some food for them to be refreshed with. But it's obvious. And the haste that he goes and does this all, that I think 3 times, it emphasizes how quickly he's wanting to get this meal put together for them. I think that's another sign that he recognizes that these visitors are more than just mere men.
Yeah, his haste here also brings us back to the Passover. The word for haste there, or quickly, is mahar, and it's actually used a lot throughout the rest of Genesis and quite a few times in Exodus as well. It's used once in Exodus 12:33, which is where the Egyptians are hastening the people. They're pushing them out of the land, and they're pushing them out quickly. And so this scene does kind of bring us back to the Passover. This will get more explicit as we go, because we're going to see that Lot also mimics this same, or he has, like, kind of an opposite parallel to this feast.
I think chapter 18 and chapter 19 are meant to be contrasted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so once we look at chapter 19 and the kind of parody of a Passover that we have there, we'll look back at this and say, like, okay, this is kind of what maybe Lot should have been like. He should have had a better Passover, in a sense. So I thought it was interesting that there's a little note at the end of this section in verse 8 where it says that he stood by them under the tree while they ate.
Right.
And I thought it was kind of weird. Like, we don't really see that elsewhere. And since he is a covenant partner with Yahweh, shouldn't he be eating with these travelers? Shouldn't he be having kind of a family meal with them? I'm not entirely sure. Again, this is another doing a lot of spitball in this episode. But I'm wondering if this is if this isn't another nod towards Abraham's priestly function as he stands by and attends to Yahweh as he offers him food, which we know Yahweh doesn't eat, but in the ancient Near Eastern mindset, offerings were presenting food to your God. And the Bible even says, like, this is more of a formality. Yahweh doesn't eat, but still it's food offerings. So here Abraham is standing by and attending to his God while he gives him a food offering in a way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a possibility. I think another possibility is it just continues showing the humility of Abraham in this moment and kind of takes a stance like a servant in that moment rather than eating with them.
There's a reverence aspect to
it. Yeah, there's a reverence aspect to it. It would be another possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. Well, so it goes on, and while they're eating, Yahweh says, "Where's your wife?" And I think it's kind of just a funny statement because she's going to, you know, kind of say something to herself in a few minutes, and Yahweh's going to know exactly what she's saying, but here he's, you know, where is she? Like, he doesn't know already.
Right, right.
Yahweh, he goes on and promises that Sarah is going to have a son next year. And so Sarah, she kind of laughs to herself and says, you know, after I'm worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? You know, shall I have a son? Is Yahweh really going to do this? Is he capable of doing it? Is he actually going to come through on his word? That's what she's asking, which is very similar to the question that Abraham asked a couple chapters ago, whenever Yahweh said, you're going to have a son by Sarah. And he says, oh, that Ishmael would live before you. And he laughs and says, how's this going to be? I'm, you know, almost 100 years old. But those questions are very similar. And I think they kind of get a slightly different response. I think in what Yahweh says, he's very gracious towards Sarah because he just says, you know, why did she say that? Why does she doubt? He doesn't slam down on her. And he goes on to say, is anything too hard for Yahweh? Look, by the time next year's come around, I'll come through on this promise. And then Sarah, she gets kind of timid and she denies it instead of owning up and saying,
which is hilarious,
I
think.
Right. And so Yahweh just calls her out flat and says, no, but you did laugh. And then the next sentence is, and then they walked away.
Yeah. So yeah, he just kind of drops the mic and walks off.
Like, right.
Which, you're not fooling me.
I guess we don't know what the tone was, but I imagine this was probably a gracious response compared to what it maybe warranted. And it could have been a very gentle, like, no, but you did laugh. And then conversation's over. Yeah. Just saying, look, I know what you did. It's not good, but okay, let's move on.
Right.
And not dwelling on it.
Well, and it does seem that Sarah, after this, takes that question to heart. Is anything too hard for the Lord? And she does come to believe it. You go to the book of Hebrews again, and you've got, because of her faith, God empowered her to be able to have this child. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like at some point she did repent of her laughter and believe in the promises of God.
Yeah, which I wanted to ask too. Abram laughs and Sarah laughs. So there is, I think, a little narrative difference between the two scenarios. So whenever Abram and Sarai ask, is this possible? Who do they ask that question to?
Themselves. I thought Abraham was talking to himself too.
I don't know. Let's see. I thought not, but oh yeah, said to himself.
Blew your theory.
Dang, it did. Sort of, but so Abram and Sarai, I keep saying Abram and Sarah, another Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah.
I
mess that up all the time.
They both question to themselves and laugh to themselves, like, is this going to be possible? Like, we're old. I do think it might be significant that Abraham then says to God, oh, the Ishmael may live before you. He continues the conversation, and he's offering Ishmael as though he perhaps believes that Yahweh actually will come through on this. He's just surprised.
I took it the other way. It's Abraham saying, God, there's no way that that's possible. Mm. Why don't you just use Ishmael as the promised one that will get the blessings?
Yeah, that actually makes sense in light of chapter 17, verse 19, because then Yahweh has to correct him and says, like, no, Sarah's going to be the one.
Yeah. Yeah. In my view, I think they both lacked faith.
They both have the same response.
In that moment, and God is gracious to both of them in the way that he responds to them. And I think, like, I mean, God understands. They're not, like, what he's telling them is not possible, which is why I think he asks that question to Sarah, is like, is anything too hard for the Lord? And I think that's the question I think that really spurs her faith on, because she comes to recognize that, okay, no, there is nothing that's too hard for him. And I believe this will happen.
Yeah. So now we need to correct. I need to correct what we said a few weeks ago, where I think we talked about how I said that Abram had more of a question that was, but ultimately he was still loyal to Yahweh in that question. He still ultimately believed Yahweh would do it. And Sarah did not. And we compared it to Mary and Zechariah.
Yeah, I do remember that conversation. Yeah. And yeah, the more I've studied it, though, I don't know that that's right. I think that I'm at a point now where I think that they were both lacking faith, understandably lacking faith because of the situation. And God responds to them both, I think, with a gentle rebuke.
Yeah. Yeah, you ripped the rug out from underneath my theory, which I appreciate, but...
Well,
now I'm trying to reconstruct here.
I'm used to you doing that to me.
So yeah, like you said, so they both have a moment of, I don't think necessarily breaking covenant, and I think that's important to mention, because they do disbelieve, and maybe it's just because, you know, we so often use the word belief as synonymous for a saved member of Yahweh's community.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
It's worth bringing up that they had a moment of disbelief, of doubt.
Yeah, there's doubts, but that didn't they didn't stop. Their allegiance was still obviously with Yahweh.
Yeah,
and I think that's very evident, especially with Abraham as he's trying to negotiate with God. Like, hey, why don't you try it this way?
Right, and to both of them, Yahweh has the same consistent response. Look, you're gonna have this kid.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that.
Well, and I think it's significant if you go down to Genesis 21, which we'll get to later on. You get the rest of the story with Sarah, that her laughter that was originally this laughter of unbelief, it turns into this laughter of joy. And she even says that the people that are looking at me, that they'll laugh also. At first, I really wrestled with, okay, why is this chapter 18 in here? It's like you're not getting any new information from Yahweh. Like Abraham doesn't get any new information here. What's the purpose of this? But I think the purpose is that Yahweh is coming down to Abraham in a much softer way than he had the last time, in a much more approachable way, because he wants to make sure Sarah hears these words, that she's going to have a child and there's nothing too hard for me. And I think that's the significance of what's going on here in this chapter 18.
Yeah. Because, it says Yahweh appeared to Abram, and the goal of them coming was to go to Sodom. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Why make this pit stop at Abram's? So
yeah,
I haven't really thought about that, but that might be the case. He just wants to affirm the promise to Sarah as well.
Yeah. And it does, I think it's a good transition also. That's another purpose of this, is it transitions us into the rescuing of Lot again.
Right.
And it highlights God's compassion, that he hears the cries of those who are in Sodom. And so he wants to go and see how bad the sin has gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. So after he tells Sarah, you did laugh. And, you know, again, I imagine that probably just being like, look, yes, you did. All right, let's go. So he leaves and they start heading out towards Sodom. Abram goes with them. I don't know if that's to, continue serving or just to be alongside Yahweh while he's able. But
maybe just to see him out.
Right. Yeah.
A good host, right?
Right. Yeah, and so what does Yahweh say in verse 17?
He says, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do?
Right, seeing that he's going to make Abram into a great and mighty nation, and a nation that will be a blessing to all the earth. For I've chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of Yahweh by doing righteousness and justice, so that Yahweh may bring about what he's promised.
Almost like a divine counsel moment here.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you've got Yahweh having a discussion with these other two spiritual beings.
Yeah, and I mean, the most significant thing is he's talking to these guys saying, should I bring Abraham into this conversation? Because I'm going to bring about what I promised him. And what's the promise? He's going to be a king of the nations, a conduit of blessing to the nations. And so he's basically, in the end, Abram is going to have the place of judge and king over even these nations that Yahweh is about to judge. And so he thinks maybe Abram is worthy of being brought into this conversation, being brought into this divine council deliberation.
Yeah. And I think the answer to that question is obviously yes. that he brings Abraham into the conversation.
Right.
You get to verse 20, and then the Lord said, because thou cry, and remember, Abraham's with them in this moment. He's there. So he says this out loud, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave. I will go down to see whether they have done altogether and according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it just brings us back again to the whole idea of what the image is as representatives of Yahweh, where, yes, we are fallen, we sin, but the typical idea in a lot of circles that I think we've probably both been in of, like, we are totally depraved, there is nothing good in humanity. It's like, well, no, we were made to be kings, to be part of Yahweh's decision-making council. And yes, we've fallen and we do dumb stuff all the time. We sin. But we were made. We have a very high purpose in our creation. So I think that's just important to remember.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
He decides, yes, let's bring Abram into this conversation. Let's let him deliberate with us and get his thoughts on what we're about to do. After all, he's going to be the judge of angels one day, like Paul says. So he tells him, like, we're going down to Sodom. We're going to see if the outcry that has come against them is true or not. Are the poor and oppressed of this city actually poor and oppressed as what I've heard in, I guess, their prayers and their outcries are from my messengers that go around? So Yahweh welcomes Abram into this deliberation. He tells them what they're about to go do. And then the conversation continues on through the rest of the chapter. But we're going to talk about that next week, so sudden cut off there, like we usually do, and we'll come back.
It's a good spot to stop. I mean, yeah. And there's a new heading in my Bible right there, too, so.
Yeah, it was inspired.
it was meant to be for us to stop right there.
Yep. Cool. All right, well, we'll come back next time and talk about that conversation that they have.